Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Once Upon a Time at the Oscars. Hello everyone, and welcome to Once Upon a Time at the Oscars, the show that takes you through every Best Picture nominee from 1927 to today. I'm your host, Kyle.
And I am your co-host, Ryan. And today, we start at 1927. I noticed you said both those things, and it's funny. We can flip it and talk about 1927 today. Because we're doing our first entry of 1927.
I am so excited to be returning to this year once again. It feels like, I don't know, just retouching such a pivotal point in my life.
Mm.
Because the first time I covered this on the first iteration of this podcast, it was episode one, and it started a transformation in how I consume movies.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's less, it's all entertainment, but it's more looking it through a historical lens, right?
Like
gathering information rather than just enjoying the emotion of it.
Yeah, and kind of forcing myself to sit down with more of an open mind than I had been up to that point in my
Absolutely.
Life. So it's almost like a weird anniversary that doesn't fall on a date, but rather an event.
Happy anniversary, brother.
Thanks, man. That's I appreciate it.
I'm so happy for you. It was interesting for me because, you know, I haven't really used any kind of streaming service like Tubi before. I think Tubi's always kind of been heralded as like, you know, if you want to watch Anaconda, download Tubi. And it has a lot of movies like that. So when you told me that, it was, you know, the first time I had actually downloaded it and actually watched something on there. So it was interesting for that. It's also just really interesting to kind of go back and watch a movie this aged, right?
Like, sure.
Just 1927 is what we're talking about today for this one. And I mean, the crazy thing is, like, you can feel it, but you also can't. Like, the way that it's shot and some of the scenes, and especially, like, the acting, it just doesn't feel that old.
Yeah.
Right? It feels kind of like, and time gets away from you so easily, but you can kind of be like, yeah, this is pretty good for the 50s. And you're like, oh, it's 27.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And it's always funny to me, certain movies that we'll be covering for the show have been restored and you know, they're brought up to 4K resolution and things.
Yeah.
So what you're watching isn't really how it was presented back then, but it makes it that much harder to be like, oh, this is almost 100 years old. We'll definitely cover some movies on the show where you're going to feel it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll get to it here in a minute, but I certainly felt a bit of it with this one. I'm very excited. You know, this is the first one that we're talking about. This is numerically, alphabetically, the first one of the three lists of what we're going to be talking about. And, you know, I think I have a passion for all forms of film. So talkies, silent, doesn't matter. And, you know, we talked about this. I ran into you. You texted me a couple months ago and you asked if I want to go see Wings at the Strand. And I so desperately did. But at the time that you texted me, I was at, I think, brunch with some friends. Or I was with them in the morning. I forget what we were doing. But anyways, we ended up at the Square. And I was like, oh, that's where the Strand is. And I looked at the time. I was like, oh, that's when Wings is getting out. I should see if Kyle's there. And like, lo and behold, you're just standing outside of the Strand. And we caught up for a bit. And we started talking about these movies and it being silent in our experience with them. And for me, I remember telling you, you know, I loved The Artist. And I know The Artist isn't like a true silent film because that came out in like, you know, 2012 or whenever it was. But I thought that it perfectly encapsulated how I like to think that I feel about silent films. And then I go and I watch, you know, A Trip to the Moon. Loved that. I go and watch Wings. I love that. So I feel like I have like a passion for silent films and the structure of it. And for anyone who's unaware, maybe it's no one, the idea of these silent films is that it was at a time where they just could not capture the audio, right? This wasn't something they can include. So the idea was that it had an orchestral piece behind it. And that orchestral piece is meant to, much like normal scores now, fill the void, so to speak, without any kind of dialogue. So, of course, while there's dialogue on screen for some things, we'll get into, there's an orchestral piece behind it that is set to, like, you know, remind you of the mood and make sure that you feel the tone that you were supposed to feel in that moment. And I think that's where the success kind of really stems for with me, right? Mm. Can you feel the acting despite not hearing them? Is the story interesting? And does the music really take you through that journey? And those are three points that I really tried to look at with these three movies specifically. And I'm very excited to talk about Seventh Heaven with you because I think there's a really big, I'll just say conspiracy, that has recently been brought to my attention that I think would change how some people watch these movies. And I want to make sure, or at least this movie specifically, and I'd love to talk about that with people. So very much looking forward to this episode.
Awesome. I'm so excited. So you dropped the title of the movie. Episode one, we're covering Seventh Heaven, directed by Frank Borzage. The studio that produced this movie was Fox, one of the big five from back in the day. Mm-hmm. This was an adaptation of a Benjamin Glazer stage play, and it's starring Janet Gaynor, who I adore, and Charles Farrell, who is a tank. Did you feel that way?
What do you mean?
Don't you think, doesn't he just seem like a massive man?
Yes. I think when I think of tank, I think of like big and beefy. He's not beefy. He's very big.
Okay.
Very tall, but not in a lanky way, right? It's not like he's a noodle.
Sure. Yeah.
But he's very tall.
I'm small. So tank is a broad word for me.
Copy. Yeah. No, I understand now. I mean, to be honest, the way he stands is very broad.
Yeah.
Like his shoulders are kind of further out than you would think they would be. So yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. He's a very handsome, imposing force to me.
To use his words, quite a remarkable fellow.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Oh, I really like that quote.
I didn't love how he said it twice. I have thoughts on that. I think it's kind of the thing where you're like, I'm a really nice guy. It's like, you can't say that.
Listen.
Someone else has to say that.
We're already fighting. I love that line.
Do you mind if I get into the award nominations for this?
Please do.
Is that okay?
Yeah, that would be remarkable.
So for 1927, the awards that we saw specifically, or nominations for this rather, Outstanding Picture, which was very much the title at the time, whereas now we would see, you know, Best Picture. Mm-hmm. Best Director, they didn't care about that one. They just wanted to make sure everyone knew. Frank Borzage, is that correct?
That is correct.
Frank Borzage was nominated for Best Director, and he won. Is that okay? You want to talk about winning?
Yeah, you know, I used to keep it a secret until the ceremony episode.
Yeah.
The idea is for this to be historical and factual. I think it's important to announce that.
I think so, too.
During the episode.
Because, theoretically, they could be like, I wonder if he won. Oh, he did. And then listen to the ceremony and be like, yeah, I know that.
You shouldn't listen to the history podcast and then be like, go find out for yourself.
Can you imagine if we're like, yeah, the war happened, but if you want to know what happens at the end of it, skip six episodes ahead.
Yeah, good.
No spoilies. Best Actress, as Kyle mentioned, Janet Gaynor was nominated and did in fact win for Best Actress. Best Writing for Adapted Screenplay was Benjamin Glazer, nominated and won that one as well. And for Best Art Direction, Harry Oliver was nominated but did not win. And it was nominated for Best Outstanding Film, which I did mention, or Outstanding Picture, but did not win.
So right off the bat, the interesting thing about the nominations in general for this year, there was Outstanding Picture. However, there was also Unique and Artistic Picture.
Why was that?
I don't know.
Oops.
I think Outstanding Picture was meant to be what Best Picture is now. It's like the most impactful movie of the year. The most important and successful movie.
Interesting.
Outstanding and Artistic, I think, was meant to be more focused on the artistic elements of that film.
I have appreciation for that because I feel like there are definitely years of the Oscars since then where I have wanted to give an award to a movie because I knew it should win, but then give an award to a movie because like it actually is the best.
Right.
And I think if we kept this same style of Outstanding Picture and Outstanding Achievement in Picture, I guess, we wouldn't have Green Book as a Best Picture.
Right.
So there's some benefit there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too because the Academy or the audience, what the Academy thinks the audience wants, this is a very personal opinion, they want to add that category for like popular film.
Sure.
That's kind of how I feel this first year is, where the three movies that were nominated for Outstanding Picture kind of lean more towards what people enjoyed the most.
Mm.
Whereas the Unique and Artistic Picture, is more of the, to sound pretentious or snobby, like the
elevated choice.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for that.
And of course they did this because the 90 years, they want to make sure they can get Endgame an honorary Oscar.
Exactly. Yeah. I do think these three films that were nominated for Unique and Artistic Picture, mm-hmm. there's some great movies in there.
But Seventh Heaven was not one of them, correct?
No, it was not.
Interesting. So
I guess I should probably save that discussion for
No, ceremony. That's great. I just want to make sure I didn't miss that. And I was wondering if it did win, if it was nominated.
No. The three there and the three for Artistic are different from the three for Outstanding.
Isn't that refreshing when you can look at Best Picture and like Best International and not worry about any overlap in that?
As someone that makes an effort to watch everything that was nominated in every category.
Okay, never mind. That's true.
I like the overlaps.
You've benefited from that.
Right.
But it was always scary for me seeing, like, you know, something like Emilia Perez not win Best International, and you're like, we're not out of the woods yet.
Right, yeah. That's fair. Jeez.
That movie's going to be catching strays for a while.
Another interesting thing about the nominations is these actors and these people nominated, they weren't held to just one performance or one entry. Janet Gaynor was nominated for Best Actress, but it wasn't just for Seventh Heaven. It was for three films, the other two being Street Angel and Sunrise, which was one of those Unique and Artistic nominations.
So I appreciate you bringing that up, because that was a question that I had. Was I saw that she won Best Actress for two other movies, and one of them was in the same year as Seventh Heaven, 1927. Yeah. So the technicality there was that, was it that she won this one award for those three movies, or she won three awards for those three movies?
She won one award for her performances overall that year.
Oh, so it's more achievement in like your performance for those years and encompass these movies.
Exactly.
Rather than winning for this movie.
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah.
So if you go back and you look at the records, you will see that Seventh Heaven won an Oscar for Best Actress, but so did Street Angel, and so did Sunrise.
Interesting. Is it because it was the same person, or if it was different people, they still would have...
It's because it's the same person. Copy. Like, I don't think she got one Oscar, but on paper, those three films won.
Almost in the same Oscar. Way that every year there's like a Cecil Bill DeMille Award, right? And it's more like your achievement.
Exactly. Sure. Overall. Okay. This was just for that contained time span.
That makes a lot of sense.
The Academy obviously did away with this very quickly. The next Academy Awards, they don't have any of this multiple movies business, and they don't have the Unique and Artistic film. There is just Outstanding Picture or Best Picture or whatever they called it at the time. I like that.
I think that's great. I mean, one thing that's kind of blowing my mind about this, I mean, I know it's very much the first, you know, movie we're talking about and the first Academy Awards that existed. Can you imagine being the first Best Director, first Best Actress to win that award?
Yeah.
Like, that's just got to be, you couldn't tell me nothing.
Right. It's so weird because I kind of tiptoe the line of, oh, I would feel just like the greatest person in the world. I'm the first best this.
Yeah.
Cool. But then also it being the first, I wonder if there would be a part of me that's like, oh, the Academy doesn't have the the reputation that it does now. So is this a big deal, or is it what everyone says about the Academy? It's just a bunch of my peers patting me on the back a little bit.
I'm going to choose to believe that a actor or actress of any time receiving an award that says best is going to be pretty high honor.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. If you're an actor now, an up-and-coming actor, and you're entering your movie into like a small film festival, a local film festival, and you win best anything, covet that like it is an Academy Award.
Yep. Feature, indie, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's a best.
Yeah. When I said I didn't know how I would feel, that's because I have a low personal value.
Oh, okay.
And I'm trying to stand on the right side of that and be like, yeah, look what I did, and not be like, it doesn't matter. I don't want to take the Eeyore stance.
Yeah, no, of course. Nor should you. I got to tell you, too, I'm not trying to talk down to celebrities or actors or actresses. If I went to a fast food restaurant, they're like, you're the best orderer we've ever had, I would be honored.
Yeah.
I would take that. That'd be the rest of my day. So my point is, if I was Janet Gaynor in this specific instance, I would just be like, well, there's the name of the movie, Seventh Heaven.
Yeah, there you go. Speaking of Janet Gaynor, her and Charles Farrell, how did you feel about their chemistry? Or should we talk about the plot of the
Let's
movie
Let's talk about
first?
The plot, yeah.
The movie takes place in Paris.
1910s, right?
1910s, yeah. So Charles Farrell plays a street cleaner, a sewage worker, actually, named Chico. He He works down in the sewers, cleaning them out. We first see him, he's taken clothes and rags and stuff that found their way into the sewer system. He's very ambitious. He believes that there are great things on the horizon for him. He is destined to do remarkable things.
Because
he is
a remarkable fellow.
I love that line. I think I said it on mic. Was that during mic?
I believe you did. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm saying it again now. I like that line. And then Janet Gaynor plays Diane, who lives with her sister?
Nana is her name, but she is her sister.
Yeah. Very
Which
abusive.
That was very confusing.
Yeah. I was like, the dog from Peter Pan?
I did both. I was like, so the dog from Peter Pan or her grandmother? And it's neither. It's her sister.
Yeah. Nana is very abusive to Diane.
Very.
It's honestly pretty rough to watch, even from today's lens.
Especially if you have the right soundtrack.
So, Diane is abused by her sister. Don't make me laugh while I'm talking about this. Diane is abused by her
sister. It's not a funny thing, Kyle.
No, it's terrible. You're right.
She's physically abused by her sister, and at one point they are specifically looking to be relocated to a nicer house, right? By their uncle, is
it? Yes. Yeah.
And in a moment that I don't fully understand, because they benefit both from it greatly, all she has to do in that moment, Diane, is lie and say that things have been fine and that they'll go to a different place.
Right.
But she can't lie to her uncle.
Right, right. Because the uncle shows up and says, listen, if you guys have been good,
yes,
then you can come with us. We'll give you a place to live and we'll be a happy family.
Right. And not being able to lie to her uncle, she says things have not been good and she actually does abuse me a good bit.
Yeah.
To which the uncle says, I don't want any part of that.
Right.
And leaves. And Nana then proceeds to just think this is probably a good thing to keep going and just continues to abuse her enough to a point where they take it outside.
Absolutely. Nana chases her down the street. It's very dramatic, very brutal what she's doing. She gets to the point where she is about to kill Diane.
She has her choked out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And our hero Chico shows up, sees what's going on.
Literally out of the sewer.
Yeah.
Just like pops right out.
And he sees what's happening. He's a good guy. He's destined to do great things. He rescues Diane. And in what I think is just a fantastic moment, he pulls Nana off of Diane and then grabs her by the wrist and dangles her over the sewer just to get her to calm down. And he's like, all right, now we can talk like adults.
Yeah.
And shoos her away, saves Diane. But Chico, you know, he stepped in to help her, but he's not there to take on that responsibility. You can tell.
Well, he has Nana make a promise, not one that he's going to take very seriously, more just to your point to scare her, that she can never show her face around there again,
right?
Which kind of pushes her into a area of seclusion where she's not really part of the picture anymore.
Sure.
But to your point, it's not a, hey, she's with me now, leave me alone, leave us alone. It's more, don't talk to her again or don't see me. Thanks, I'm going back about my day.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And it's not until Nana shows back up with the police.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, there she is. You want to arrest anybody? Arrest her. She's a vagrant. She doesn't need to be on the streets. Blah, blah, blah. Chico, again, wants to help. So he takes the opportunity to say, hey, this isn't right. I saw what was going on. You can't take her. This is my wife. And I love this part because the police officer is like, really? You sure? This seems weird to me. But okay.
Sounds Aren't they good. Like, at this point, and this is one of my favorite parts of that moment, when he saves Diane, he kind of quite literally like drags her to like their eating spot.
Yeah.
And just like sits her down and then he and his buddies just eat. And that's when the cops come up. They're just like, hey, romantic couple, are you just eating on the street and like chilling out by this car?
Right.
As you do.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I share his hesitation of like, really?
Yeah, this looks a little weird. How come she's not having any of that bread?
Yeah.
What's going on? But the police officer says, okay, fine. If that's what's going on, cool. I want to make sure, though, I'm going to come back later. If you guys aren't still married, then one, I'm going to take her away. And two, you're going to lose your job.
Yep.
And Chico loves his job. He just had an opportunity to become a street cleaner. So he gets to come out from the sewers and actually work where there's sunlight. So, of course, Chico, he doesn't want this to happen. He's stressed out because now he's got to pretend to be married to this woman he knows nothing about.
And doesn't seem interested in.
Right, yeah. But he says, okay, fine. They agree. You can come live with me. Just stick around until the cops show up. but then you're out, you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of sum everything up, they end up falling in love.
They do.
It's very remote, remarkable. What was I going to say? Romantic.
It mostly takes place. You went through all your R words, yeah. And you're like, not there yet. It is remote, though. It mostly does take place in the apartment. That is true.
This is true. Yeah. And the apartment. So to get out of the beat by beat story bits and to talk more about how this was filmed and just what kind of movie it is, the apartment is a beautiful setting to me.
Oh, my God. Like, to a point where I thought that I kind of missed, I mean, I did, but I thought I missed a good bit in the first like 20, 25 minutes because I'm seeing them live on the street. I'm seeing them like eat on the street. And like his best friend, his coworker is named Rat. Like,
I love the Rat.
Well, I thought it was like, I was like, that's rude. And then like the next shot is him close up and like he has the teeth. And I was like, okay, never mind. I understand Rat now.
Yeah.
So all of that to say that when he's like, all right, come back to my place, I'm expecting, like, you know, something from, like, Aladdin. Like, you know, I found this nice little hole in the wall. My guy has, like, at least a 5-bedroom.
Right.
Like,
it's massive.
It's huge.
It's like when you first see Monica's apartment and Friends, and you're like, wow. How
I'm did that so happen? Relieved that you said that, because everyone entering in through his window made me think of Monica's apartment and Friends.
Yeah.
Not that they would do that, but, like, it's just this large open space in the middle of the room.
Right.
And everyone would just walk right in. And seeing that, I was like, I mean, look, I understand it's 1927 and, like, you know, not being very wealthy at the time may not have afforded you too much. This is a lot.
Yeah.
And like, I'd be very happy in this life. And it's overseeing the streets of Paris. Like,
exactly. It's beautiful.
Pretty
it's
great.
Gorgeous.
Pretty great.
I love it too. Probably the best shot in the movie is when he's bringing Diane up to his apartment.
Yeah.
They're walking up this stairwell.
Circular stairwell.
Yes, thank you. The camera starts, you can see through the wall, so you're looking at the ground floor of the stairwell, and as they walk up, the camera moves up as well, probably on a crane of some sort, and it follows them all the way up, so you're seeing just how high he goes from where he works in the sewers all the way up to this gorgeous apartment overlooking the streets of Paris, and that's what leads to my personal favorite quote of the movie, where he tells Diane, "I work in the sewer, but I live near the stars."
Mm.
So nice. How do you not fall in love with someone who speaks that type of poetry? You know?
It's a very good point. I think, you know, it was... should we get into it? Should I just say it?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Okay. So, there's a couple ways that you can watch this movie, audience. And the way that was introduced to me, because this is Kyle's fault, was that Kyle told me that you can watch all of them on Tubi, which is totally true.
This is true.
You
this
absolutely
is a fact.
Can. Both. All three, Seventh Heaven, The Racket, and Wings are available on Tubi. However, I did watch Seventh Heaven on Tubi, and I texted Kyle halfway through the movie. I actually had to watch this in two settings. Mm-hmm. I texted him halfway through, and I was like, yeah, man, I need like one more song added onto the Seventh Heaven soundtrack. And he was like, oh? And I just told him, it's just unbearable. Like, I don't understand. Movies are supposed to be, like, you know, I know it's 1927, I know it's a silent film. Movies are supposed to have, you know, like, a score that really, like, soars with it. Especially in a silent film, you need a score that's going to, like, meet you at the emotions and help you feel that grand nature. And having one song that's 3 to 4 minutes long on a loop where you can literally hear the record player stop and then start again for 2 hours is miserable. And I believed that with my whole chest going into today's call or meeting, right? Mm-hmm. So it was in the end of the last episode, and I hope you can go back and listen to it, where Kyle mentions that you can also watch it on YouTube. And there's something that clicks in my head where I said, oh no. And it's dawned on me now that there are two different versions that are available, one on Tubi and then the regular edition, the normal edition with the regular score, the intended score on YouTube. And that intended score is dynamic and meets the tone where it needs to be and is an amazing theme. And we listened to it off pod for like 5 minutes and it sounds great. And I'm very eager to go back and watch Seventh Heaven with the correct score. But with that being said, it did sour my experience of my first time with Seventh Heaven to a point, and tying it back to what you were just saying, where whenever Chico was saying he was a remarkable fellow, I was like, this guy is a pick-me. This guy has to be like, I'm the nice guy. And that's not the case, and it's totally just me watching the score and being like annoyed by it. But to say what I loved about it. Oh my God, the sets. I thought that the set of him working, like in the very beginning, working in the sewer and like being able to like see the water flowing through the streets of Paris and like look up and like see the streets of Paris as well. I thought that the set design was incredible. Again, the apartment is like what you would want. The streets are great. Like, I thought that the set design was remarkable. And I wish that it got a little bit more love for that. But again, at the time, they didn't have awards for this specific thing.
Well, they did. It was nominated for art direction.
Oh, it was.
So there was that. It Perfect. Did not win, but, you know, it was recognized at least.
Okay, very good. You're correct. Art direction. Thank you so much. Didn't win. I'm not going to say should have. We'll get to that with the ceremony.
Sure.
But I thought that was great. And I thought that Chico became much more likable over time. I thought that Diane and Jeanette Gaynor, correct?
Janet Gaynor.
Janet Gaynor. I thought she was remarkable. I thought she was great. She played it so well. It really did make me buy their relationship. It didn't just feel like, we have to fall in love because that's what the story tells us to do.
Right.
You could see her actually like caring for him in that moment and like him being, I'm not saying this in a negative way, dumb enough to not realize he's falling in love.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like he's kind of going through the motions but doesn't recognize that's what he's feeling.
Right.
And it's not really until like he realizes what she does for him and the life that she gives him. Because at first I think he feels it as like, or sees it as he's getting a service for this for being like the hero.
Right. She's cooking. She's giving him haircuts and things.
Which the haircut scene was interesting because he was admiring himself for a long time. He was like, this haircut rocks.
He's a remarkable fellow.
He's a remarkable fellow. That's true.
It's a remarkable haircut.
For a remarkable fellow. It was around that point where I think you can kind of see it click for him where he's like, well, I'd be a fool to pass this up.
Right.
I thought that was great. And I came back around in his performance and I definitely view the movie a bit differently now, knowing that it was a soured experience of an incorrect score. So anyone who's going to watch these movies, it is available on Tubi. However, do seek it out on YouTube where you can get the original intended soundtrack.
Yeah, and just to speak on my perspective of that whole
You're
thing.
You're a villain. Nope.
I am a villain. I had no idea that that score did not exist on the Tubi version. I was just like, oh, cool. They're all
I mean,
available.
Why would you?
Yeah.
Why would you even think that?
Because I didn't watch it on Tubi the first time I saw it.
Sure.
Score aside, it is incredible that they are all available on streaming at all
sure.
at this point.
Yeah.
They were not when I did the first iteration of the show. So I'm very excited that availability and the ease of access, the accessibility rather, for these movies has improved so much.
Right.
But when you sent me that text, I was like, what? What are you talking about, man?
You know what I love about that?
Good music?
Not only was that for the first year, it's the first episode that we're covering. Right. So a bit of you was probably like, did I pick the right co-host? This guy hates movies. And no, we've uncovered it. That was the problem. I am going to go back and show you the song or let you listen to the song that did play. I'm telling you it was Misery.
Oh, I believe it. Because I popped on the Tubi version. That was how I intended to watch it as well.
You're right.
And it started playing like it was one of those pianos in an old saloon that just plays by itself.
Think about going into a saloon in 1917, okay, audience? 1917, you walk into a saloon, and the piano player is playing something, and you're like, this song is okay. And he says, another one. And he does that for 2 hours. And that was my experience of watching Seventh Heaven. Not ideal. But still, I can remove that from the equation and still very much say, movie's pretty great.
I'm so glad. Because when you did start saying, like, I've got my issues with it, but we'll get to it. I was like, what happened?
Well, the issue was the experience and not the movie itself.
Yeah, and I thought about like, oh, should I tell you? Should I let him know? Hey, you can watch it on YouTube. It's better. No, I don't want to expect him to have to watch it again, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, I'll just leave it and it'll be content.
Just so funny. Such good content. You did it for the pod. Congratulations. No, I think that was the right call. And I very much did enjoy my experience with it overall. There's just a charm to it, right? I mean, that's the whole point of it all. But there's a charm of seeing like where these people came from and what they're able to achieve. I think that there's some qualms that I have with it that don't necessarily like affect the grading. You know, if I was going to put it at a B, I don't think it's for this or another reason. I think that there's some opportunities where there are dialogues happening between characters where there aren't title cards to share what they're saying.
Right.
And there's a, you know, if someone's nodding or shaking their head or a very simple yes, you don't need that. But there's like a couple, like 30 seconds where like people are having a conversation and you just don't know what they're saying.
Sure.
And I think that there's some hesitancy there, but the most important thing, and that's how these movies existed back then, was they're giving you the dialogue that you need for the story. Any other dialogue that's happening, you have to trust in them that it's not pertinent to what you know about the story. So there's like a tiny little thing that's a me thing and not a movie thing that stopped me from like really fully connecting with it. But that's on me and not the movie itself. That was very much of the time how these movies had to be made.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's interesting. In one of these books I'm reading, there was a title card writer that spoke about like how it is an art form.
Oh, interesting.
And the importance of it and how that really can make or break one of these silent films. Because had they added a title card for every time they were having a conversation,
it would be two and a half hours.
You'd be sitting around. Well, yeah, the length of the movie would be long, but you'd also be reading so much. And ultimately, people were going to the movies for the visual. They weren't going to read.
Of course.
So it is hard to find this balance of providing enough information through text, but not just overbearing or overloading the audience with just, hey, read. Read, read.
Right.
So that was really interesting, but I can totally understand, like, just being like, what are they saying?
Yeah.
What is this important?
Well, imagine me being annoyed at the score.
I know.
And then that happening, and I just go full Omega, just like boomer parent, just be like, well, am I supposed to know what they're saying?
Right.
So no, it was, again, totally a me experience.
Caused by me.
I wasn't cursing your name at any point through it, I promise
That's
you.
That's good.
I mean, so overall, like, you know, you just saw Wings. We talked about this a couple months ago. You've seen plenty of silent films. You've done your research with all these. How did Seventh Heaven hold up for you in that batch?
I think the biggest element that makes Seventh Heaven an enjoyable film today are the performances, specifically with Janet Gaynor.
Of course.
The chemistry between her and Charles Farrell, I really, really enjoy. I think they make a great on-screen pairing. I think specifically in this movie, his way of showing his love for her leads to so many cute interactions because he's almost playfully like, no, I'm not super interested in you, but, you know, go ahead and open that box on the table. Oh, a wedding dress? How'd that get there? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And her reaction to all of that and just the physicality behind her acting and just her appearance, her eyes are gorgeous and they are able to contain so much emotion. She's the highlight of this movie without a doubt.
Right.
I think because of her and their chemistry, it allows this movie to hold up as something that can be enjoyed today. This is the type of movie that I would put on in the background. Well, I can't say background because silent movie, you kind of have to sit down and watch.
A little bit. Well, the score is really good.
Right. Yeah, if you're listening to it.
I'm told.
But, you know, something that I would sit down at night, wrap myself up in a blanket and just be like, you know, I'm going to fall asleep. I'm going to watch this and just enjoy the cute moments of their relationship.
For sure.
I enjoy this quite a bit. I think it holds up.
Well, it's, you know, it has the expected push and pull of she's very much, I'm committed. I'm ready to win it. And he's more hesitant, right? He's more, this was an arrangement. Like, you know, there's a scene where she's cooking for him and he said, like, you know, typical, the way through a man's heart is through his stomach. I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Once the police come, you're out of here. And you start seeing him kind of like ease up on it a little bit because she's very much like, you know, the idea of getting married, having this dress, like being here with you, your apartment's amazing, which it is. Honestly, more of a state than anything. Then you have him realizing that he's in love and seeing how eager he is to fall into that, I think was like just amazing. There's one scene I want to talk to you about, and it's where the police come to interrogate him. This is kind of like the crux of the story a little bit before the real crux comes in. And that was interrogating them to make sure that they are actually married.
Right.
The whole purpose of the plot here. And the police officer does arrive and he walks in and he says, are you married? And they say, yes. And he walks into a room. That's the last time that we see that officer. Was there documentation? Did they have to wait 3 days? Like, did they not think that two people could be in a room and just be like, yeah, we're married? And be like, ah, damn it. You got me. Sorry.
Well, he does ask them to kiss.
Oh, he does, yeah. Doesn't he?
He says, oh, hey, aren't you going to kiss your wife?
Oh,
and
yeah.
And they're like, ooh, that's icky.
But it's
smooch.
Yeah.
And icky. Then Janet Gaynor, like, blushes or the equivalent of that when there's no color.
Well, you could see the different color on her cheek,
and that's why she's incredible. Yeah, it's so good. The
physical acting.
So good.
But him walking in, just being like, are you still married? Just be like, okay.
I love it, buddy. Too. The first thing he says when he walks in, he opens the door, he walks in, and he says, I am a police detective.
He does. That's true. So good. I got a big laugh out of that because he does hold his finger up, too. Just like, it does feel a little bit like 5 seconds before the camera started rolling. They're like, hey, you're a police detective. I am a police detective. Right,
yeah. You got to reassure you. See, if Chico can say I'm a remarkable fellow.
Then this guy absolutely can't. Yeah.
When I was taking notes, I told you I went to sit down and write notes. Mm-hmm. I got to this part and I wrote the equivalent of like, LOL, I am a police detective. I pulled out my notes from the original run of the show.
Oh no.
I wrote the same thing. I really like that moment, I guess.
It's great. No, it is a true great moment. I do remember laughing really hard at that. I'm glad he said it though, because he's not wearing like the typical police detective outfit.
Yeah.
So he kind of needs to say that.
Right.
I feel like you either need the attire, like you need the clothing department to help you out with that, or you need a screenwriter to tell you what to say to sound like a police detective. He was like, I'll meet you in the middle. I'll just say what a police detective would, which is that I am a police detective.
Which is good. I hope they all announce when they enter the home.
But maybe not after the door open. Maybe when the door's closed and you're letting you know who's on the other side. But
fair play.
To be fair, he is the only person who enters. Well, that's not true. I guess Father Vermilion was it at the end? Comes through the door, but otherwise everyone else just comes through the window.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very Clarissa explains it all.
It's such a great show.
Yeah.
I love that show. We all need more windows that you can crawl in and out of.
Inspired by this movie, actually.
Was it really?
No.
Well, you know, the ladder of it all.
Yeah. Which you would use to climb up to a window.
Of course.
So tons of cute moments all leading up to that moment, with the police detective.
Which is kind of the moment that he realizes. I think that kiss is kind of like him recognizing what he has.
Yeah. And if not that moment, 2 seconds later after the detective leaves, when she feels like, all right, that was the moment. Now I've got to leave.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, if you stuck
so
around.
So romantic.
You wouldn't be in my way.
Yeah. I think like the line he says is something about like, you wouldn't be much in the way if you stayed.
Yes.
And it was just like, wow. It's honestly, 1927, probably the most romantic thing a man has said.
I think it's the perfect delivery for Chico, though.
Yes, him not to admit it.
Right. It says, I want you here. I need you here.
But don't make me say it.
Right.
Yeah.
I loved it. She runs over. She's all excited. She kisses him again. There are so many cute moments like that. As we move forward, I mentioned a wedding dress. Chico is pretty much like, hey, there's a box on the table. I don't know.
Maybe check it out.
Yeah. She opens it, finds a dress, questions him about it, and he's like, you know.
Won't fit me.
Yeah. I like his character.
No, I do too. And I think like a movie like this has to hinge on that, yeah. Right? Because the dialogue can feel like them, but it's not very engaging on its own. So you really have to be all in on them. And you are. And I think, you know, for most films, it's worth pointing out that this is 2 hours. So I think feeling, you know, the length of the movie, you would kind of expect this to be the end, right? We've reached the point where they've really overcome all of their struggles. They've found a way to be together and we're good, but it's not. And we have about 40, 35 minutes left in the movie. And that's where we introduce the idea of the war, right?
Right.
World War I, reaching France specifically, is what really tears them apart, because specifically, Chico has to go join his brothers. Well, I say brothers, but he has to go join his fellow Frenchmen on the battle line. And the thing that kind of got me, I'm interested in your thought on this, it's not a bad line, it just made me laugh. His buddy just shows up, he's like, hey man, yeah, we gotta go to war, you got an hour. And like, he really does just tell him like, yeah, you know, we're shipping off in an hour, buddy. Go get everything you need. And this is after they say that they're going to get married. So they have to kind of rush the idea of getting married right now. Right.
Yeah.
And then that's the remainder of the movie is Chico off in war while, I almost said Janet, Diane stays back and very much has the apartment. That to me felt, it caught me off guard because I felt like, the natural progression of the story had kind of peaked, right?
Sure.
So now we introduce this, and then we kind of realize that there's more to it in the sense that, like, Nana can still come back. And she does. And she says a line that I thought was hilarious, which is like, I've been hiding in the sewers, waiting for Chico to leave. And he finally did. All it took was a war. And now I can come back and get you to come home. And I think that that, again, feels like a moment where you're like, okay, well, here's the next 20 minutes of her like being trapped by Nana. No, she just like turns the table and just completely like just reverses roles and just actually like hits her until she leaves and runs out into the street.
Which is beautiful because her inspiration for that comes from an earlier moment with Chico where he kind of teaches her not to be afraid anymore.
Yeah.
It's awesome. There's so many things that I think Diane learns from Chico that she then uses to find her independence from Nana. And Chico, you know, learns love that he wasn't really focused on. He's focused on being something great.
Yep.
And he finds love instead. So they learn things from each other. But like you said, that scene with Nana, even though it's great when Diane finds her backbone and whips her away.
Again. Like, you know, good for her standing up for herself, but it is quite literally a scene of just like they're beating each other with like a whip with a belt, I think.
Yeah, like a what do they call them?
Was it not a belt? It was like a bullwhip, wasn't it?
I think so. Yeah, it's a bullwhip.
It was quite literally a bullwhip. Okay, great. Yeah. Where they got that, who knows? But yeah, no, she just quite literally grabs the bullwhip from Nana and just starts hitting her instead. I think there's a good 15-minute scene or 15-second scene where like Nana's just on the ground and she's sitting here nonstop.
Wailing on
it. It's like, okay. I like that too, though, because to your point, it was her like kind of like finding her self-confidence and her like, you know, worth, but then very much still just like going in.
Yeah.
Right? So she still has, you know, a little bit of built-up aggression on that. And then that takes us back to the war, right? And Chico is serving over there. And ultimately what it leads to is Chico has found his demise. Chico is dying. And tells, I just want to make sure I'm getting this right. Is it Father Chevalon?
I don't know how to pronounce that.
We'll say Chevalon, because I'm not going to say Chevelle. Father Chevalon, he tells the father to pass on his necklace that he kind of acted as rings for them, right?
Right.
In lieu of rings, they had necklaces they gave each other. And he had his necklace, and he told the father to give that to Diane and to tell her that he was dying and died looking up, right?
Yes.
And he passes. Father heads back to France. Word has already kind of gotten out through some other people, so Diane's being told in the moment. And it's not until the father shows up and hands her the necklace that she actually kind of starts accepting that this is real. And while this is happening, cue moments of the mist, the war is breaking up. And the war has ended. And the streets of France are celebrating while she's having like the worst news of her life. And what happens, Kyle?
Hard to say, actually.
I'm glad you feel the same way.
Yeah, the ending of this movie is pretty bizarre. You're made to believe that Chico died.
At no point did it seem like, hey, the light is fading from my eyes, so I'm pretty sure I'm dying. Right. It was just very much like an explosion has happened, a shot has happened, and I'm not going to make it.
Yes, but the movie does kind of just say, like, this is what's happening.
Yes.
Very much like the detective. I am a police detective. My name's Chico, and I'm dying.
Yeah.
Chico comes back. The streets are celebrating. Chico's running up the street just as Diane is just...
accepting?
What is that what it is?
She's like accepting his death.
Yeah.
Because she's still very much in the room with their friends, their couple friend, actually, and the father.
Mm-hmm.
And my beef with this is that it's not really clarified what he thought he was dying of or like what they told him he was dying of. But even if it was blindness... He's running pretty like healthily. Like he's running through the streets. We see him again in the streets of Paris, running through the crowded streets of people celebrating, trying to get back to his apartment. And if he's blind, he's like navigating it very well. So the whole thing is just communicated not very well. So you think he's alive and just completely well. And he makes his way to the staircase, the circular staircase you mentioned earlier, climbs all the way up, gets through his room. And there's a moment where he walks in, and maybe this is the grain and like the filter of, you know, a camera from 1927, but there's a shot where on the left side of the apartment is Diane and on the right side is Chico. And there's almost like an almost hazy filter over Chico where a part of me was thinking that this was like the ghost of Chico.
Sure.
Because it was so unexplained what happened with him that we just assumed he's still dead. And no one's really reacting. They're kind of looking at a door that might have just opened. So I thought this was more of a, like, you know, even in death, she still sees him and is still with him.
Yeah.
But no, it's quite literal that he has survived and he's just blind. Another line that I really liked was, they shot every shell they could at me and it couldn't kill me.
Yeah. Because he is a remarkable fellow.
Because he is a remarkable fellow. It's a really hard line to survive the war and come back and be like, they shot every bullet they could and it couldn't pierce me. But he is blind and that he still is looking up and they're able to be together and the movie ends. The ending was a little confusing for me, and I'm glad to hear that it was for you, too. I thought I missed something.
Yeah.
Wasn't fully explained.
Yeah, so what I actually think it is, it's confusing to me because I think it is supposed to be very open-ended and very open for interpretation.
Okay.
Because you mentioned him running through the streets, and, hey, you're doing a great job for someone who can't see.
Sure.
You know?
And you're literally pushing through people to where you're not going to know where you are.
Exactly. Him showing up and kind of appearing a little phantom-esque. Is another reason.
Absolutely.
And then the last shot of the movie has Chico and Diane embracing, and a light comes through the window, focusing on the two of them, giving it a very heavenly, which makes sense,
sure,
feel to it. So much of that is like implied little clues of maybe this isn't really happening. Maybe this is Diane's hallucination of what she hopes happens. Chico
right.
didn't die, or Chico did die, but she believes, oh, he's going to come back to me, and he's blind. Like, that sucks, but he's not dead. The audience gets to sit there and choose, oh, I like that ending.
Mm.
It's a bummer that he's blind, but they're together, and that's what should happen. Or, oh, he really is dead, and now Diane, you know, God bless her soul.
See, and I get that, and I think that there's some complications that I have. I always look for other characters. Right?
Sure.
Because of course she's going to see Chico. Is the father going to see Chico? Is their couple friend going to see Chico? And when they do, and they are in the room and they're looking at the door and everything that's opened, that to me now has like, you know, this is happening to all of us and not just me.
Right.
If it were a separate shot of Diane grieving after everyone has left and that happens, I think that's the perfect ending of what you're saying. Of
sure.
like, you know, is she imagining this? Is it really happening? Who's to say? But we're in the moment with them, so it doesn't really matter. It's the inception, right? It doesn't matter what's happening. It matters what they're doing and how they feel. Having them witness it, to me, that complicates both endings a bit.
Sure.
But the way that I ended up choosing to see it was that they had to make it a very happy ending. So it is, you know, well, you know, I pay the price, I am blind,
sure.
but I am able to be with you and I am alive. And that's ultimately, you know, God shines down on them through that light and they are basking in his light together.
Yeah.
That's the way I took it.
Sure. I can't say for sure. I think Frank Borzage wants it to be interpreted that way.
Sure.
A lot of his films are very super romantic, almost to the, what you would call now, like the cheesy
sure.
level.
Goes too far.
Yeah. That being said, I don't know if you read what more recent film was inspired by the ending of Seventh Heaven.
Was it Just Like Heaven?
It was not. It was actually La La Land.
Interesting.
Yeah. So not to spoil the end of La La Land, but it is the ending kind of...
A similar interpretation.
Yeah. It's a whole separate life plays out for the main character of seeing what could have been. That one to me is a little more defined of what actually happened.
Completely agreed. Especially with what it cuts to afterwards.
Sure, yeah. But Damien Chazelle, director of La La Land, has gone on record and said that Seventh Heaven was the inspiration for that.
Interesting.
So I think that...
He sees it in a similar way.
Exactly, yeah. Chazelle might see it as, oh, Chico did die, but Diane is carrying on this dream she has of what she would have hoped happen instead.
Hmm. Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, so, I mean, I still think what happened is what you see on screen.
I think
that's
so, too.
Interpretation. But,
because the ray of sunshine that comes down on them when they're embracing, to me, feels more like a The End title card.
Yeah.
Than it does, like, a hallucination. It just feels very much like, you know, of course they did. Like, they lived happily ever after. Why
right.
wouldn't they? So I think it's also intentional in that sense. You could look at it a different way, but I think it's intended to be the true ending.
Yeah, I think so too. The light coming down as well, and the movie being called Seventh Heaven, something we didn't talk about at all, is the religious undertone throughout the entire movie.
Sure.
Chico is a devout atheist.
Yeah, literally denies getting married in church because he doesn't believe it.
Yeah, yeah. This is something that the first time I watched it, I felt like, oh, wow, look at what they're talking about in the 20s. now I have a better understanding that, you know, religious beliefs weren't as solidified in the past as I think they were.
Sure.
But I do think it's interesting in this movie that as Chico and Diane spend more time together, Chico's own religious beliefs start to shift a little bit as their relationship grows.
Yeah.
And I think that light shining down at the end, Chico has a few words about the Bon Dieu God while they're embracing towards the end that kind of show, I do think I believe, and that beam of light hitting them on their apartment close to the stars, I think kind of emphasizes that shift in his beliefs.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, I wonder if that is maybe the reveal there of, like, you know, he has now turned his beliefs because of his experience with Diane to a point where that's what saved him.
Mm.
Like, yeah, we're bringing you back, so we got to take something from you, you know, your vision, which is interesting. It doesn't fully, like, complete the puzzle for me, but right. That is an interesting idea.
I think that it's something, obviously I've not seen the stage play, probably something that is a little more prominent in the stage play.
Right.
That they explored the best of their abilities in a silent film from the 20s.
Right.
That whole element doesn't have a huge impact on me and my viewing experience.
Mm.
Really, I'm most interested in the cutesy relationship that they have.
Right, which is definitely the appeal, and I think what works best about it. I did really appreciate that shot you talked about of scaling up the stairs, things that felt very impressive because, you know, we'll get to it, but this is a year where other nominees that are nominated for Best Picture have very remarkable moments in film,
mm-hmm.
at least in the way that it's shot. So the ones we're talking about to this day. So very interesting to see, you know, a movie that tries to do the same thing. Not the same thing, but does something similar.
Yeah.
In achievement. So, no, I mean, great. Honestly, I enjoyed my time with it overall, now knowing what I know. please watch it on YouTube, everyone. Please. Or if you can find it on physical, fantastic. I don't believe that you can. I don't believe there's like Criterion or anything of this at this point.
What there is impossible to get.
Mm-hmm.
In 2008, there was a box set of Murnau, Borzage, and Fox, kind of like a documentary about their works in general, and then it had a few different movies, including this.
Interesting.
That was released by 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment. I looked for that. It's so hard to get, and it's so expensive if you find it anywhere. It's like $800.
Is that DVD or Blu-ray?
DVD. So, you know, this is one of those things where we talked last week about the purpose of the Academy, and we talk about film preservation and
conservation,
thank you, of these movies. Yes, it's available on Tubi now, which is great, but it's always surprising to me that the Academy doesn't make them more widely available and work with 20th Century Fox to put out like an Academy version of the film or something.
I mean, I think it, ironically, that's kind of what Criterion is, right?
Sure. Like
Criterion is very much standing for that second best picture category that they had at the Academy Awards in that, yeah, this wasn't, you know, the most popular thing in the world, but look what it did for cinema. So I wish they had something like that. Honestly, at the very least, I wish they had a channel, you know, like a Criterion Channel-esque.
Yeah.
To where they could have, you know, they already do it at their museums. They have, like, introspectives and, like, you know, we're doing Trauma Week and we're doing, like, you know, Romance Week. Put all that on there. Like, put it to where people can pay a certain amount every month or yearly and watch all of that. And then you really are speaking to the preservation and conservation of film and not just we celebrate it every year.
Yeah.
We should celebrate it every day. So I'd love to see more of that. I'm a big physical media guy, so I'd love to physically own it. But at the very least, put it out somewhere to where we can view the true version. You can tell I'm salty. The true version of a film. That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
But again, you wouldn't even think that like fake versions of the score would exist. So, or alternate versions, I should say.
I still don't know where that came from. I don't know so why weird. That is on Tubi in that way.
You know, Tubi and I are going to throw down, but I have to use them for a little while longer. So we'll wait until that doesn't happen.
I'm definitely going to check each movie first and let you know if the score is...
Look, if it works, I don't really think I care too much, but it just absolutely did not work for Seventh Heaven.
Yeah, that's rough. The parts that have to hit kind of need that music to
hit. Completely agree to a point where like literally Chico's death scene when he's, I mean, war is happening. There are literal explosions happening and I'm just hearing the Entertainer. And I'm like, this is not good. I need to be like in the moment and feel that, like, you know, sorrow and terror and, like, you know, uncertainty.
Right.
And not just the same feeling I've been feeling for the past hour and a half. So, again, my own problem, not a problem of the movie. So don't take it out on it. But overall, very much enjoyed my time with Seventh Heaven.
Yeah. I'm glad. I really am glad. I used to do ratings out of 5 stars with half star intervals.
Interesting.
What would you put Seventh Heaven at?
It's tough. I wish I would have prepared this. I mean, I don't think that there's any reason to give this below 4. I think that it's extremely respectable. It's extremely well done. The chemistry is really what you're looking for. And to be honest, at a time like this, you can ask for like a couple great shots, like, you know, as a real cinema head, so to speak. But the main thing you're looking for is that connection.
Yeah.
And I think that had I watched this with the correct score, I do think that I would have maybe a little bit higher, like a 4.5. But to your point, you really cannot like turn down that Diane and Chico chemistry. It's just extremely well done.
So good.
They play off each other so well. So yeah, I'd say 4.
That's awesome. For someone that watched it with the wrong score and was like bitter the whole time, I always give this a 3.5.
Oh,
so it's interesting that you go higher. I think that the third act of this movie, Chico going off to war, it kind of loses my interest. I love what's going on with Diane and how she, you know, stands up against Nana. But everything that happens on the front with Chico, there's a scene with the gentleman and his taxi, Eloise.
Yeah.
It's funny, but none of that, it's like I was talking about, all of the war and the action that's so prevalent in movies from this era, it's very hard for that to hold up to a modern lens in a way that I think the romance and the chemistry between characters...
It's timeless.
Exactly. So I kind of lose interest towards the back half of this movie.
That's fair. And to be honest, maybe I'm just on a redemption tour of talking garbage on this movie. So 3.5 sounds like something I can meet in the middle on completely. Sure. And maybe with the original score, I would still have some of the complications that I have with it now. Because I do think that the war is kind of tacked on to it, to be honest. It feels like a means to an end to get to your final scene than anything else.
Yeah.
And especially with how rushed it feels. Maybe you really did have an hour lead time back then, but just felt very comical in the moment.
Totally. I completely agree. And man, that war, just a theme, it shows up so often. All the way up to, I don't know, the early 50s.
Like the score?
No, I mean the actual theme of,
The war. Got it, yes.
And, you know, this is World War One, but the 40s, almost every movie that came out had something to do with the war. So it's going to get pretty exhaustive.
It's interesting because it doesn't feel like it's played for, and maybe the score changes things, it doesn't feel like to me that it's played for, like, emotion. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, can you believe they're going to war? It felt like more like a happenstance. Like, he just happens to be going to war. And to me, I think that's an interesting time of, like, 1927, of just, like, accepting, like, yeah, this is just where we are.
Right.
Right? Like, we're not saying, isn't this terrible, isn't this horrible? This is just what happens. To a point where one of the nominees, like, literally is set in the war. Like, there is very much that existence of it, but it doesn't feel for or against. It just feels very much, this is the setting.
Yeah, this happened.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. It's always interesting, too, when one of these movies made in the United States is talking about the war from another country's perspective.
Totally.
I feel like they often just use the war as a setting like you're talking about,
right,
rather than provide any type of point of view of the feelings behind it.
I also, before we sign off, I want to make sure that I give credit where it's due. I mistakenly named a character earlier. I said that a character that Chico interacts with pretty early on is named Rat. And that was offensive. I'm really sorry. His full name is Sewer Rat.
I just saw it.
On Wikipedia, he is listed as Sewer Rat. So yes. Much love and apologies to Sewer Rat.
Hey, you know what? Sewer Rat dies a hero.
Sewer Rat was my father. Please call me Rat.
You know, Georgie Stone that played Sewer Rat, he's going to show up in a couple years in another film.
I'm looking for the return of Rat.
The return of Rat. I love it. Like I said earlier, Janet Gaynor is the highlight for me.
Absolutely.
She won, like we said, not just for this film, but also for Street Angel and Sunrise. I know that we're only covering the outstanding pictures for this year, not the artistic, unique and artistic pictures. Sunrise is probably the most beloved movie that came out during this Oscar season to this day. In the book, 1001 Films to Watch Before You Die, mm-hmm. it is the only movie from this Oscar season that is listed.
Interesting. Sunrise, A Song of Two Humans.
Correct. Yeah. It's a great movie.
I haven't seen it yet.
Is
it on Tubi?
It is on Tubi. Mm. And it's got the right score. Actually, it excellent. Has a really good score.
Okay.
There's a moment that's like horror-driven. Excellent.
Wow. With a name like Sunrise, you wouldn't expect that.
Yeah, it gets pretty dark.
I'm very excited because I did like Janet Gaynor a lot. She has a perfect face for movies.
Yeah.
I mean, just like incredible emotion.
I'm excited. I'm going to try and watch Street Angel before the ceremony episode. I'm really excited to watch that.
I think the next time that I put on a waistband, I'm going to ask Taylor to help me put it on the way that Chico has Diane put it on for him.
Yeah.
It's very whimsical. It's very funny. That's it.
No, I'm excited. I was waiting for you to describe it because it's so beautiful.
Well, he just like he holds it to his waist and he has her go out about 20 feet or so, and then he just kind of like almost pirouettes into her.
Yeah,
and it's just almost uncharacteristically feminine of him, which is like very refreshing to kind of not see like this toxic, like, you know, ability. Like he's very much having fun with it in the moment, and it's very fun. So that was another moment that just kind of makes you fall in love with them.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, if you do recreate that and you want to film it.
I know what song to not set it to.
Man, I love that so much. It's so good.
Honestly, just so par the course for me with like historical accuracy of just being completely on the wrong planet. So that was nice.
It's perfect.
It's great.
It's so good.
Did it for the pod.
One last thing I'll say before we go. This was remade in the... 1937. It was remade, and Jimmy Stewart is in that version.
Interesting.
Never saw it. I've not heard great things about it, but I'd like to check that out one day. I'm a big Jimmy Stewart fan.
Not successful, I noticed.
Yeah, so.
Which is weird.
I don't know.
They weren't into... Even back then, they're tired of the remakes.
Yeah, they were. But yeah, that was the last thing I wanted to throw out. That pretty much does it for Seventh Heaven.
Yeah, that would do it for our first episode of our first movie of the 1927 Oscar or Academy Awards ceremony. So that means that our next episode, if we're going in our alphabetical numerical order, is The Racket.
Yeah. You've not seen this one yet.
I have not seen this one yet, but I have very gleefully noticed that it is an hour and 22 minutes.
Always nice.
And it is on Tubi. So I'm interested. You know, I'm going to catch it, I think, later on today. And then I'm very much excited to finish things off with Wings. Cool. And then we'll be all set.
Yeah. So next Wednesday and next episode, if you're not following along, is going to be The Racket. Like you said, that's yep. a Lewis Milestone movie. You said it was on Tubi, right?
It is, as well as Wings.
Okay, cool. So I'm excited for that. That was really hard to find like 3 years ago.
Oh.
So I'm so excited thank you, Tubi. It's on Tubi.
But also, see me in my office.
Right, yeah. If you have any comments or feelings about Seventh Heaven or any of the movies nominated for this year of the Academy Awards, shoot us an email over at outaopodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on social media. All of the links will be in the show notes. And check out the Patreon, patreon.com/outaopodcast. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
I did double check the Instagram handle, and you're not going to believe this. It is Once Upon a Time at the Oscars.
Wow. I can't believe I got that.
Yeah, I know.
I thought it would be hot ticket. Commodity, yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. So yeah, check us out there, TikTok, YouTube. But that's going to do it. Thank you all so much for listening. As always, I am your host, Kyle.
I'm Ryan.
And we'll
see you at the movies.